You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Will Out Radio. Today's date is the 27th of January 2017 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. As always today, I have the producer of Adolf Hitler, the greatest story never told with me. Dennis, how are you doing on this fine winter's evening?
I'm fine. It's just last night I was doing a late radio broadcast. Not that I minded. I still haven't caught up on any sleep yet. So as soon as this program's over with, I think, you know, it won't be long before the old snoring starts.
Yeah, so long as it doesn't start before the end of the podcast. Have you been up all night then? Have you been up all night?
I often work through that, as you know, but this time I had a radio interview and a good one as well. We spoke about the sacrifices, you know, the blood sacrifices and the Pizzagate, etc. So yeah, we're good.
And there was me thinking, oh, Dennis is up bright and early this morning talking to me on Skype.
Well, I was up.
Yeah, from yesterday still.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, what we've got to talk to you tonight, you've got a new video out, Dennis, which I discovered today.
This is the first video that I've done since coming by the back door, actually. And that was like towards the back end of last year. I just didn't feel... I had, as you know, I had some attempts, but I didn't really have the spark, and I was kind of forcing it. So I thought I'd wait till, you know, it came along, and certainly it did this week. An interesting subject, I thought, which is why it motivated me to put it up online.
Well, yeah, a very interesting title. And it basically says a rabbi admits that Dennis Wise was right all along.
Well, He is right in what he says. He totally agrees with what I said, which does make me right. So, I will claim that title.
Very provocative, isn't it?
I mean, it sells DVDs.
It's a great title.
the thing is, right, I thought this was if this is true, let's be honest, because these guys, you know, are experts in these things. But if this is true, this is some kind of shift, I think. Because for the listeners out there who haven't seen the video yet, you may have seen a couple of versions, but actually, you know, there's a lot more to this than just a rabbi. But this, it opens up with our old friend. Now, I can't pronounce these Jewish names. You know, I'll apologize to anybody listening in Israel. But this first rabbi is giving the class, and he's talking to his students. And this is the guy featured in Communism by the Back Door and openly admitted that, you know, the Goyim, out of a full bucket of water, the Goyim are just two drops at the bottom compared to a Jew. And he gave a couple of other examples as well.
I remember the one, Dennis.
Sorry?
I remember the one, yeah. Because we did a bit of a podcast about this, because, I mean, this is just one of the things that highlights that these Jews twist what's in the Old Testament. And this is an accusation that's, you know, always been leveled against them. Jesus was saying to them, you don't follow the Old Testament, you follow the commandments of men. And in that clip, we had a perfect example of it, where this rabbi was saying, he got this verse out of the Old Testament, and he was saying, well what this is saying is that the Gentiles aren't worth two drops of water that are left in the bucket that you drain out of a rag, or words to that sort of effect, basically rubbishing everyone else other than Jews. And that's not what the Old Testament says, because we looked at it, didn't we? And it was actually something completely different. But these Jews, they just lie.
Exactly. The second one, he compared it to the scales, if you remember. After so long, you know, that, you know, if, when you've got these old kind of scales, what, you know, the wear and tear, and, you know, you might give somebody 1,000 gram, but really it's 98.7 gram, but who cares? And he was saying that, you know, us guy are that little piece on the floor which nobody cares about. You know, fair play, at least we're honest, you know, this is how you think.
No, these are what they think. Well, we know what they're like with scales as well. They're not going to be honest with that, are they?
Probably dodgy scales to start with.
But dodgy
anyway,
weights and measures.
He's kind of talking to his class and he says, I saw a video the other day and I just asked to put it on Facebook because, you know, it was mind-boggling. And apparently what it was, this other rabbi who he holds in great esteem is a learned scholar, according to him, and an expert on the Holocaust, etc., put this video up and he was stunned. And so he put it up on Facebook and his final words are, he's quoting from Adolf Hitler's Mein Kampf, which has finally been translated into Hebrew after being banned. And you will not believe it. So then it goes into this other section with this other rabbi talking. And the point of it is that he's read Mein Kampf and he realizes now why Hitler hated the Jews. He never knew. And neither did the first rabbi, because he was stunned as well. Now, apparently what he was saying is that it wasn't in the curriculum that he was educated under, and other Jews as well. How many? I couldn't tell you. And even at a higher education, you know, when he was talking, lecturing to professors, etc., still no mention of this. And he goes on to say, more or less, that everything that Adolf Hitler said was true. And the fact was that he didn't know that Hitler hated the Jews because the Bolsheviks were Jews and had killed umpteen million in Russia, and Germany was next.
30 million, I think he said, wasn't it? I think it was 30 million. Yeah, 30 million. I think it was 30 million. But yeah, I mean, what he was saying is that he hadn't read Mein Kampf before. Now, I find it very hard to believe that this rabbi didn't know that the Bolsheviks were all Jews. I find that very hard to believe. What do you think?
I think he knew they were Jews, but what he was saying was he didn't realize that it was, this is why Hitler hated the Jews. I think he just thought Hitler hated the Jews from birth.
For religion, wasn't he? He was saying, you know, this is a big shock and surprise. Hitler didn't hate us because of our religion. He hated us because so many of the communists were Jews.
That's right.
And then he moves on. I find that hard to believe. He's right. That is what they are taught in the school curriculum. But, you know, the Jews aren't that daft. They know why they're hated. They can't believe their own propaganda. It's just this weird disease we have.
I mean, you know, if it is true, then if his curriculum isn't telling him such an important thing as this, he's surely got to look at his curriculum and see what else it's either not saying or is lying. Because he's an expert on the Holocaust. But, I mean, if you don't know about the Bolsheviks and you know, the battle that Germany had keeping them at bay till eventually they were overwhelmed with the Freemasons in the West to help them, then surely he's got to look at this curriculum, because he openly admits that the curriculum was put together by the left wing. And the left wing, he admits, are never going to say that Hitler hated the Jews because of we Bolsheviks raped and pillaged across the Ukraine. So the whole thing's, surely he's got to look at it now and think and question why it was done. Two, if there's anything else he doesn't know. And three, what lies are in that curriculum, what everybody's learned.
Well, that's just showing you that it's no different to the lies that we are taught. I mean, this is what everybody says, isn't it? Hitler just genocided all these Jews because they were a different religion to him. Yeah, he just suddenly won, or else they say, he suddenly went mad and decided to just kill all the Jews. And it wasn't really much to do with their religion. It was to do with the effect that they were having on the German culture, the degeneration of the German culture, the degenerate art, the promotion of divorce, the promotion of homosexuality, and also their effect on the economy. The way that they had taken over the banks and that they'd taken advantage of the poor state that Germany was in after the Versailles Treaty to buy everything up for themselves. I don't know. Did the rabbi mention anything about the Jewish involvement in banking, or was it just Bolshevism and the cultural Marxism?
Yeah, he didn't mention anything about the banking, but what he did mention, like, he openly admitted, you know, that the Jews in Russia were out of order, and in his opinion, godless, because he's obviously supposed to be religious. Whether he believes in the same God as us is another question, but what I'm saying, like, is that he, you know, he thinks these are out of order, and he actually states that in that first Bolshevik government, of the 13 members, six were Jews. So out of, you know, probably 0.1 of a population, suddenly you're 50% of the government. And he's openly admitting this. And he's openly admitting, like, who founded the KGB? The Jews did. You know, and he's saying, you know, they destroyed religion and faith, you know, which he obviously is against, he says. And this is why Hitler, you know, was at war with him. Because they were coming, in the Soviet Union, they killed all the intelligent, didn't they? Leaving the only intelligent people in the Soviet Union, the Jews. And that's what they do in every country. And that's what Hitler knew was coming his way. So it's, I don't know, if this is true, then it's, you know, he's certainly got to be looking at other things, you know.
Well, that's what the rabbi said, wasn't it? He said that the Bolsheviks killed 30 million people, all the intelligent people, and then the only intelligent people that were left were the Jews. And Hitler said that that's what they wanted for the rest of the world. So he's admitting that bit. But this is an example of what happens when you do get a Jew that seems to be telling the truth. They always leave one part out. And what the part that was left out here was the banking. That was the part
banking, obviously, which is, I mean, if you don't know that, then come on. But he does say, he quotes Hitler saying that the Jews poisoned literature and the theatre. German newspapers, out of nine German newspapers, he owned seven. And so what he's saying, you know, he's quoting Hitler from Mein Kampf and agreeing with him. And obviously, by agreeing with him, he agrees with me.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, this is all stuff that you've exposed. It's stuff that Hitler has written about. It's interesting to see that there's a rabbi talking about it now. But there really isn't that much difference from then till today. If you think that six out of, over half of all the newspapers were owned by Jews, if you think of all the newspapers, the television, the film industry today, I mean, it's 99% of it is owned by Jews. I mean, they've really got all that sewn up.
Tied up.
One of the other bits that he was talking about, that showed you a bit of Wagner there and what Wagner said about the Jews and the Jews claiming to be Christians. And once they claimed to be a Christian, they were still a Jew, no matter what they were claiming to be. The same as if they claimed to be a German, they were still a Jew. They claimed to be a Christian, they were still a Jew. And this rabbi was agreeing with that.
What we touched on this last week, didn't we? We said that this is where I must have subconsciously remembered. He's quoting Wagner now. This book was also banned. Not only books they banned, I don't know, but, you know, they probably burnt them and then still blame Goebbels for burning all theirs. But anyway, Wagner turns around and says, don't particularly like religious Jews, but hey, so what, you know. But the Jews that he really hates are these Jews turned to Christianity, changed the name, you know, because within, you know, a generation or so, the Germans don't know they're talking to a Jew, and the Jew always remains a Jew. Whether he speaks German, writes music, it's not going to be German music, because I think it's all about Mandelson, whose father changed from being a Jew to Christianity. And, you know, whatever you do, he's saying, you know, it says, it's not German. We have pride in our music. You know, everything about the Jew is decadent. And it's killing the German culture. And the Germans have no idea if there's a Jew stood in a room or not, when the Jew, who is always a Jew, and the rabbi agreed, knows he's a Jew and infiltrates and does what Jews do. These are the Jews that he hates.
Well, he's quite right too. I mean, those are the traitors to his own kind, and they're the most dangerous kind to ours, because you can't tell who they are. And this just shows you, it's all about ethnicity. It's not culture. It's not religion. culture and religion emerges from the shared ethnicity. It's not the behavior that's dictated by the culture. It's the ethnicity that directs the behavior, which causes the culture. And when we have them in our nations, then they just subvert the nation. That's what they've always done. And the biggest danger is when people think that they are British or they think that they are German, and then they marry them. And then gradually over time, they forget, unless they look at the family tree, that they were actually Jewish. And then you've got a generation of people that look white that are all tainted by this Jewish blood. Pretty certain, you know, that's why we have so many problems in government, because this happened with a lot of the aristocracy, and a large portion of the aristocracy now have all got a certain amount of Jewish blood in them. So they're naturally going to be inclined to promote homosexuality, just be out for themselves. And if you look at David Cameron, for instance, he's one of them. I think his great grandfather that was a Jew, and then you look at his behavior while he was in office, everything that he did, you would think, well, if it's a white man, an intelligent white man, is he really going to be wanting to promote homosexuality? Is he really going to be wanting to bomb the hell out of Libya and go into Syria? Is he really going to love Israel that much? I mean, David Cameron went to Israel and he was practically prostrating himself before the Knesset, desperate to be accepted as a Jew like all the others. It was sickening to watch, grovelling before a foreign power. This is the other danger. Well, then they have this loyalty to this other group. If we allow them to say that they're Germans or they're British, and we allow them to get into Parliament, once they do get into Parliament, their loyalties are to Israel, which is, we see in just about every white nation now. The government has to have a Friends of Israel group, don't they? And if a political party doesn't have a Friends of Israel group, they haven't got a hope in hell of getting anywhere.
Well, that's true. I mean, he actually goes on to say that Wagner is right, by the way, because obviously, you know, by Jewish law, if the mother is Jew, then, you know, the children are Jewish. So even though they're Christian, just change the religion or whatever, you know, like Wagner said, you can speak German, but you can write poetry, you can write music, it's still Jewish because you're a Jew. And of course, this rabbi agrees with him, he's right. And he also talks about the Nuremberg laws, where Hitler had brought these laws out to say that, you know, the Jews weren't allowed to marry Gentiles. But he says, but there's nothing wrong with that because that's what the Torah says. So he's happy with that. So there's really no criticism of Adolf Hitler at all. I mean, granted, he doesn't start talking about the Holocaust. But then again, like I said, if he's found problems with his education, then he's got to look at it all, not just this, you know what I mean? But we're talking before we just came on about Jews not being white. I know you wanted to talk about that as well, Sven.
Yeah. Well, you know, this ties into this. I mean, a lot of the time, especially just recently, we've been hearing, what happens if you're married to someone who is half Jewish? You know, you just stay married. Well, you wouldn't say the same if it was somebody who was half Negro or half Pakistani. And it's the same thing. The Jews are not from Europe. They're bloodline. They may have fair skin, but their bloodline goes back to Arabs. It goes back to slave traders in the Middle East, with the Negro slaves and Aborigines of whatever countries they've been in. They're a real mishmash of a real mix of all these different types of race, and a lot of them aren't Caucasian European races. We're talking, you know, races from the Middle East. Yeah. That evolved from the people over there breeding with their slaves. And I was just looking at David Miliband the other day. He was being interviewed, and he is so brown. He just looks like a Pakistani. Oh. And this is your typical Jew, very, very dark skinned.
Well, he's a communist as well. Well, I mean, he's a communist, but.
Well, he is. He's from a communist family. But the point I'm making is, you know, we almost had him as our prime minister, and the majority of Britain thought that he was white. And yet he's not. He's a Jew. He's an obvious Jew, a very, very dark-skinned one. because that's what they are. They aren't white. Marrying them is the same as marrying Negroes or Pakistanis. It's miscegenation. And the children that they have, at least if it's a Jewish woman, the children will be brought up to be Jews, so they will be identifiable as Jews. But when one of these male Jews marries a white female, if those children are baptized and then brought up to be Christians, then they can unknowingly infect the other bloodlines and contaminate the rest of the people in the country and damage the British pedigree. That's what it comes down to. You can stop all the other problems that the Jews bring, but the actual miscegenation, the contamination and adulteration of the race, that can never be stopped. And when that rabbi was saying, well, those Nuremberg laws were based on the Torah, the Nuremberg laws were based on the Bible. You know, do not adulterate your race. That's what that commandment is. Do not adulterate. Yep. And that can only mean do not adulterate your race. What else could it be that you're adulterating? Only your race.
For those people who can't understand the fact that Jews don't like the white race and don't consider them as white, there was a documentary years ago which I came across not so long ago on YouTube called World at War, which is another massive documentary, you know, many, many parts and long hours, which was shown on British TV many years ago, probably even longer than the my documentary, but was a massive piece of propaganda as well. But there's a section in there where there's an American soldier who's talking about when he went to Germany. Once the war had finished, he was over there, and he said one day he was walking through the streets, and this German woman came up to him and tried to prostitute herself to him. You know, obviously, this did go on because there was no food, and you know, people had to sink to such depths because of what the Allies were doing to Germany. And he just said to this woman, "Oh, just, you know, keep out of the way. I'm in a bad mood." But she kept pestering him for, you know, did he want sex or whatever? He says, just leave me alone. You don't really want to know me. I'm Jewish. Just leave me alone. And she says to him, and this is in the documentary, she says to him, so you're a white Jew. And the fury in his face, and he says to the camera, he says, what stopped me from smacking this bitch in the face? I do not know. And it's because she said he was white.
They admit they're not white. You know, there are articles from the Jewish magazines saying that Jews have got to remember that they're not white, and they have advertising in Israel saying that Jews have got to marry Jews, and they mustn't marry Arabs, and they must remember that they are a separate ethnicity. They're not a separate ethnicity of the white race, like, say, if you looked at British people, Spanish people, Lithuanian people, Finnish people, Russian people, they're all different branches of the white race. But the Jews aren't a branch of the white race. The Jews, brothers, are the Arabs.
Do you know what the problem is, really? Is our women are too beautiful for them. They cannot resist. All these other races cannot resist the white woman. I'm convinced. I mean, granted, it's been soiled with lesbianism and some feminists lately, but you know, the ordinary white woman with the features and everything, all these other races are, you know, they just flock to them, and obviously, you know, this is what is happening in Europe at this moment in time, which after the rabbi had stopped his lecture. This is where I change pace a little bit. And a quarter page from Mein Kampf, a couple of pages, where it talks about the weapon of the Jew. It was, and it is, Jews who bring the Negroes into the Rhineland, always with the same secret thought, clear aim of ruining the hated European race by the necessary result of bastardization, throwing it down from its cultural political height, and himself rising to be the master. For a racially pure people, which is conscious of its blood, can never be enslaved by the Jew. In this world, he will forever be masters over bastards and bastards alone. And this then brings us into another section of, you know, the video of like communism and this race mixing, what's going on as well. But certainly, the white race is suffering at the moment.
Right, I think one of the problems is if you look at the animal world, if a creature is within a territory, the breeding rights come with the territory, and we are supposed to protect our women from these other races. We need to protect our pedigree so that it doesn't become adulterated. And yet, if you have these other races in our territory, they expect breeding rights with that, because that's the way the animal world works. If you put a bull into a field, then it's going to mate with everything that's in that field. The same as if you put a ram in a field of sheep, it's going to mate with everything that's in that field. If you bring Muslims and Negroes into the country, they're going to mate with whatever they can find. And added to that is the beauty of the white women, and they obviously are the most beautiful women on the earth. Otherwise, these other races wouldn't emulate them. They wouldn't be wearing blonde wigs. They wouldn't be, the Asians wouldn't be getting breast implants to look like them. Now, you can see that objectively, the white woman is the most beautiful on the earth, and there's no arguing against it when you look at the way that these other races try to copy them and culturally appropriate our stuff to try and make themselves look like they're white. I mean, just look at the Negroes. Look at the whole system that they have, what they do with their hair, the whole industry that they have of wearing wigs and weaves, and they're all made from white people's hair. They don't want an Afro weave. They want white people's hair that they can stitch into their heads, and they'll wear that for 6 months at a time. Like wearing a hat for 6 months at a time with her own hair scrunched up underneath it. It's this sweating, stinking thing that they'll put on top of their heads to try and make them look like a mulatto, to try and give them the people the impression that they've actually got real hair. Of course, it's not. It's just fake. They can't run their fingers through it. All they can do is just flick the ends of it. You can watch them on the television when they've just had a weave done, and they're sort of throwing their hair around, trying to catch people's eye on the television. And you know, it's just a wig. Whenever you see straight hair on a Negro, it 9 times out of 10 is going to be a wig or a weave. The only other chance what it could be is somebody with a hell of a lot of white genes in them that has very dark skin, because otherwise, you know, it has to be a wig or a weave. And you imagine, you know, you sort of getting down to, you think you've got someone that looks really attractive, and then you find out, well, it's fake hair, fake nails, fake breasts.
Well, you know, what bad enough
they're going to have black skin, but go on.
Well, you know the music industry?
Yeah.
I mean, we may have some beautiful women, but I do believe, you know, one or two are short of a brain at times. And the guys as well, but in the music industry, one of my pet hates is when they start walking like a monkey. You know how, you know, this hip hop type of thing, and they crouched over with the shoulders and they start clicking the fingers and all this kind of carry on. They're trying to be black.
Yeah.
Well, why? Why?
You know where they promote it all
black
the time?
To the blacks.
All the time, they'll promote the black man as being the ideal. Showing all his wealth off on his bracelets and his necklaces and his rings with all his whores on each arm. White man's the opposite of that. He saves. You know, that was what we looked up to before, that the man who sacrificed and saved and put everything aside so that he could provide for his family. He didn't need to show it off because he's white. If you're white, you don't need to show off your wealth. You're already at the top, aren't you?
You've just reminded me. I think it was Spielberg, actually, who said the next James Bond should be black.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous, or isn't it?
So that'd be interesting anyway, because you're not the like.
No, it's like the new Miss Helsinki is a negress.
Some guy just won, what was it called? Won a woman's award. What's it called? U2 singer.
Bono, isn't it Bono?
Bono, yeah, Bono, yeah. He got presented with Woman of the Year or something, didn't he?
I thought you were going to say some transsexual had won the award now. The transsexuals were all complaining about this recent feminist march.
Really?
Saying it was all gynocentric. It was all to do with biology. What do they expect? What do they expect? Is it demanding to be...
There's more of them these days, and gays. I'm convinced there's something going in the food.
Well, the problem is, instead of looking at the figures and saying, why have we suddenly had a thousand-fold increase in children saying they're transsexual, surely there's something wrong with this, they're celebrating it and saying, oh, isn't it wonderful? Right. They feel they've got the courage to say that they don't know what they are now. What it boils down to is all the information that they're being fed. They're being told that if they say this, they will be rewarded, because that's what they see going on. And this is all caused by this cultural Marxism that comes from the Jews. After the war, they decided that's what they were going to do. They couldn't get a revolution. They couldn't get the workers of the world to unite and smash everything and pull everything down. So they decided that what they would do is they would come up with cultural Marxism and political correctness and critical theory, and they would criticize absolutely everything about the white man's culture, and particularly the family, particularly the father as the head of the family. And they would promote the homosexuals, and they would promote the Negroes, and promote everything that was attacking white society and white culture. And that's where this comes from. They've promoted the homosexuals. They got the homosexual marriage. They promoted the Negroes. We've had a Negro president. We've now got people just being given jobs purely and simply because they're black and they're not white. And the next thing they've moved on to now is promoting these transsexuals. There obviously aren't enough of them yet for them to have a big movement like with the homosexuals, but they're working on it. They're working on it.
And they've thrown that guilt around as well for long enough.
Well, again, make the white man feel guilty for all of this. That's a part of it as well, wasn't it? It was to make the white man feel as if it was all his fault. All the problems of the world are his fault, and criticize all the white heroes that we have in our past. Make them out to be homosexual or make them out to be women. Make out that women did all these things and not men. Yeah,
well, that strong women, weak man thing. But this again... In the video, the next stage is what I've always said, and we've got a guy, and I've had this guy quite a while, in the back files on my computer, and we wonder when I was going to use it, because he gives a quite simple explanation of how America, at least since the Federal Reserve, has been communist, and if America has been communist since the Federal Reserve, then Britain also is communist, and this is what I said. Communism by the back door, and he goes on to explain why America is living in a country which is the 10 planks of communism. The majority of them are already instigated in America and, of course, in Britain, and people don't even know it. He talks about progressive income tax, talks about the central bank, talks about how you can't take X amount of money out of the country. You've got some people wanting to go to New Zealand, but they can't take all the money with them. I think it's 10,000 are allowed to tech, and the rest stops for the government. He talks about how during the war, some people were taxed 98%. And he actually says, hell fighting the Germans. I've been wanting to fight the person who's taking all that money, more or less, all his money off him. So, that was a nice little piece that I'd saved for quite some time. And I thought it worked quite well.
Yeah, that does fit in well. He talked. If they can take your property from you, then that's your rights that they can take away from you.
You have no rights. Yeah, if private property, you've no, if you can't own any property, you have no rights. And this is what he's trying to explain.
What about the mortgages as well? I mean, you get given your money. You sign up for a loan so you can get a mortgage for the house.
You're not given any money. That's the thing.
But you work to pay this off, and you pay off a quarter of it, and then you lose your job, and they just take it off you. They own it then, and they can use the police to go around to do that. And obviously what you were mentioning there at the beginning, they just create the money. They just monetize your promise to repay it back.
Well, basically, the contract's supposed to have two signatures on, but if you sign off your mortgage, that's it. Nobody else signs. It's just one signature. And then they say, there's your 200 grand, whatever, and pay it off. You know, well, they don't show it. They just say, you know, that's now, and you pay off every month for the rest of your life.
You're talking about the Fed in America and that being run by these Jews. You're looking in Britain, the Bank of England has been run by the Jews ever since it was first started. Since King William of Orange brought them over and said, "Yeah, you can have the keys to the bank. You can run the Bank of England. You can have all of that." And they've had that ever since. Ever since they were brought back into the country on the back of William Cromwell and asking him to let them back in. And the actual letter that they used to try and get back into Britain, I mean, listeners really should look that up. The letter that was given to William Cromwell to try and get them in, because in it they plead to be let back in because they're so good at usury, and they say we're no good at farming, we can't do farming, we can't do any physical work. All we're any good for is usury. All we're any good for is usury. And if you bring us in to do the usury, we'll earn lots of money for you out of the usury. But who is the money from that usury going to come from? It's going to come from the British people. And yet they're so blasé about it that's all they do. And yet our laws made usury out to be as serious a crime as murder. Now, if you were caught doing usury in the time of Alfred the Great, you would lose everything. You'd lose your home, you'd lose your business, you'd lose your family, you'd be locked up. You know, a really serious crime. And then that just got changed in the last 1,000 years. It's really only been in the last 500 years. And shortly after the laws on usury were changed, that was when they brought the Bank of England in. And just like they do today, they say this: we're going to create a law for the banning of usury. And then they would create a law saying you cannot charge more than 10%, but you can charge anything under 10%. Whereas before then, all of usury was wrong. But they say, we're going to make a law to control usury, and they just set legal parameters for it.
It's a backdoor thing, isn't it? I mean, the Catholic Church is guilty of that because, obviously, in the Catholic Church, once over, that usury was hated, but now it's accepted.
Yeah, it was both.
I show again in coming in the back door again.
It was both. It was Catholic and Protestant. They both let it go on. There were those that spoke against it, but they both ended up letting it go on, and they both profit from it today. Catholic Church makes a lot of money from the bank. Protestants make a lot of money from the bank. And I believe it was about 100 years ago that the whole of the Vatican Bank and all of Peter's Pence, which is this money that the Catholics give in, that was all given as collateral on a loan to the Rothschilds. And they ended up taking that and taking over the bank. So you've got the Jews controlling all the finances of the Catholic Church. And I should imagine they probably control all the finances of the Anglican Church as well, through all the secular banks.
Yeah, I think just that period when Hitler was in charge, he kicked them all out, didn't he? But then after the war, all the Freemason lodges opened up again. All of the Rothschilds went back into Europe again and took the positions, and all the financial system was reinstated. And this is what people don't realise.
Well, I think you mentioned the Freemasons as well in the new video, didn't you?
Well, the central to it all, again, with the coming in by the back door. This next piece I actually take from Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, which shows D-Day. And this is a perfect example. I mean, there's a guy there, you know, he's making fun of Hitler on the ship, like, and the commentator says that, you know, it's the biggest armada the world has ever seen. It's all going over there to take down Hitler underneath the Atlantic Wall. And, you know, and they're expecting, a lot of these soldiers are expecting to die. The twist of it all, of course, is because America was communist and actually funded the Bolsheviks and Stalin through Freemasonry mainly and the bankers, these soldiers were going to Normandy to fight and die for communism, which none, I don't think any, would have the penny would have dropped because they were so brainwashed with the Nazis and Hitler. But there it goes. It shows them, and it shows the huge force that, you know, 25,000 paratroopers even the night before behind the lines. They broke through Hitler's wall. And for those who died, ended up in Omaha Beach, where today you can go along today and you see the pyramid with the eye over the, you know, the capstone, the New World Order, proving that they fell and died for the Communist New World Order. And those soldiers, what didn't die at Normandy, and went on, you know, to take down the Germans and their allies, you know, stopping the only person who could have probably saved us all from what we have today. They didn't know, but then again, they did take great delight in doing it. So I'm always going to hold a bit of a grudge there.
Well, a lot of these, a lot of the people that fought on the side of the Germans that were in the SS and the various Waffen SSs after the war, some of them were sent out to fight against communism. They were sent out to Hungary and South America. They were used to fight against them. They knew that communism was going to be the enemy. They knew this back in 1918. Winston Churchill wrote a long piece about communism and how it was all controlled by the Jews. We had Secret Service reports back from around about that time that were explaining exactly what was going on in Russia and exactly who was behind these Bolsheviks. And they were just criminals. They were just armed gangs, basically. You had an armed gang taking over the government. The Secret Service, the NKVD, they were all headed by Jews and the and majority vicious. Of the people in it. Yeah, all incredibly vicious. This was all revealed. Vicious. It was all revealed by these Secret Service men. So there was no, you know, we didn't know about this. But they have to cover that up today. That's why they tell so many lies about Adolf Hitler, because they have to cover all that up, don't they?
Yeah, well, what confuses some people, right, I just want to clear this point up, is that, you know, when I'm saying that, you know, the Freemasons from the West leading, you know, the Western armies attacked Hitler from Normandy, and the communists, their allies in the East were attacking them, and they both come together, obviously, to let the Russians do what they did in Berlin. But then they're puzzled why, later on in history, the Americans were fighting in Vietnam, the communists down there. But for those people who don't realize that it wasn't a war over communism, that was a drugs war. That was the CIA losing out of the drug money, which enabled them to do all these operations like Syria and places like Libya, etc. And exactly the same with Afghanistan. That was another drugs war. There was more drugs in Europe, more heroin in Europe, after the Americans had beaten the Taliban than there had been before the Americans even got there, which is just pudding, proof of the pudding.
So it was the same thing with Vietnam then?
There was a golden triangle down there. The heroin was coming out. In fact, there's a film made about it where they used to smuggle the heroin back into the country in the coffins of the dead soldiers.
I think I might have heard about that.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, and but that war ended that particular section of drugs for the CIA. So the next one, obviously, was you have to go elsewhere. And the poppies of Afghanistan was prime picking.
Well, we know about the one in Afghanistan, and I mean that's I think it's 10 times the amount of heroin is now produced over there than there was by the Taliban. And the way that it comes into Europe is through Kosovo, isn't it? And where they had that war there, where they've all got the UN.
I can remember that line, bastard Tony Blair, saying, you know, we have to stop the heroin getting to our children. And there's more heroin then after that than there were before. War criminal.
Well, if you look back at the trade of that, you can again, that goes back to the Jews, doesn't it? The Sassoons and the Rothschilds and selling their opium to China in exchange for tea. And you've got the Chinese saying, well, our whole country is addicted to it. So they refused to swap it for the tea. And then you've got the Crown sending in British soldiers to fight against the Chinese for that. There are two wars they had with China to force them to buy the opium from the British Empire, controlled by the Jews. And it wasn't finally stopped until the Chinese started growing it themselves. And that's where we get this idea from, of the Chinese opium den and the Chinese being responsible for opium. It's only because they started to grow it themselves after they finally got sick of having all these wars against them and being forced to take it. Eventually, the court themselves were taking it. And that was when the emperor said, look, we've had enough of this. We've got to just grow it for ourselves. That's the only solution. I mean, that's a horrific thing to do, isn't it? Get the whole country addicted to opium.
That particular opium war, I looked into that once over, and the country was that bad, you know, that the soldiers weren't fit enough to fight. They were that induced with this opium and going to these opium dens that they would sell their wives just to get a fix. That's how bad it was.
That's how bad it is today. I mean, it's the source of it's the source of a lot of crime. It's very hard to know what to do about it, how to deal with it. Duterte seems to be dealing with it quite well in the Philippines. You know, just going after these people and wiping them out,
taking out the drug dealers. Yeah, well, it works or not is another thing, but because when one goes, another one arises.
And when you had the Weimar period as well, they had all the problems with heroin and cocaine, and that was legal at the time, wasn't it? And they were using that for their drugs parties and the prostitution and all the same problems that we have today. They had back then. So I'm not sure that people say, oh well, we should legalize drugs, but they had legalized drugs in the Weimar period, and look at the state of that. You know, whether they're legal or illegal, we still have a problem with them, and you've got to just not take them, realize the harm that it does.
Some I think are worse than others, but I mean, most drugs cause misery. Certainly, the crack cocaine, which was going around America, was lethal. And a lot of blacks suffered with that as well, because the CIA pushed them into the ghettos. People think that's a myth, but it's a fact.
Oh, I was just going to say, wasn't it the FBI that introduced that, didn't they? They cooked up loads of it and then sold it all to the gangs, got them all addicted to it.
Distributed it, yeah.
Well, this is one of the problems with our law enforcement system. Instead of actually going after the criminals,
that's a problem.
They wait until the crime has been committed, and it's not much further to go. Instead of trying to prevent crime, waiting after the crime has been committed, to encouraging people to commit the crime in the first place, which is what these intelligence services do. They infiltrate the Muslim groups, and then they encourage them to commit terrorist atrocities. They get involved with all the drugs gangs, as we've just been talking about, and they import the drugs from Afghanistan and sell them. And while they're doing that, they then get intelligence on all the other criminals that are involved in it. So it's all about gathering intelligence, and the way to gather the intelligence, so they have to commit these crimes. And when you think about it, there's no limits to that. You know, they're involved in the child abuse and child pornography and all of that as well. These intelligence services are involved in. And the only time put a stop to was during National Socialism. It went on in the Jersey Children's Home, and the National Socialists put a stop to it. That's the only time that it's actually been stopped.
Yeah, well, there's no need to take drugs because life was good. Life was fine. Everybody had a job. Everybody had food on the table. These days, it starts with the degradation and depressions, and people are taking even so-called legal drugs. They're taking them to get through the day, which is no use, because the problem's still there. You're just taking a pill just so that you can cope with it. But just going on to this next section. My favourite guy, Mr. Kudinov Kalerny, where Nick Griffin, I had this for a while on the computer as well, where he gave a speech to the EU, telling them exactly what it was and how there was this secret agenda to race mix Europe. And, they should all be, never mind the Nuremberg trials, they should all be sent to Nuremberg and retried, these people. Because they are what they are. I mean, to do what they're doing, this genocide to the white race, is pure evil. And of course, Richard Kudinov Kalergi was a Freemason, and he worked for the Jews.
Now, it's a very good clip of Nick Griffin there. It's a great shame that that was the only clip there is of him really standing up to the EU and speaking the truth to power. That really is the only one that we really have, and he does very well there. Why didn't he do more of that in the 6 or 7 years that he was in the European Union Parliament? Why did he wait right until the end before bringing that up? That's a big
failure. I think his father was a Freemason, if I seem to remember. I could be wrong, but I think his father was.
And you think what's happened to the BNP now? I mean, we desperately need a nationalist organisation in Britain. I hope and pray that this new leader of UKIP is going to turn out to be something. I know I have high hopes for him, and there isn't much sign of it so far. But that's really the only hope I think we have in Britain is with UKIP. If they just become more extreme, more against Muslims, and more for the ethnicity. Obviously, Donald Trump being in power in America, that's going to help push things in the right direction. But we desperately need some kind of nationalist organisation in Britain. We have the National Front, but they haven't really got anywhere. But BNP, they haven't really got anywhere. And we've got UKIP.
Well, I think it's the media, to be honest, one of the National Front and these other parties. Granted, some were infiltrated with Jews, but I think the media plays a big part. I mean, we've got a very, very left-wing media over here, always have had. And I think UKIP, if they start to make any real gains, will feel the wrath of the media, I think. And whether people believe them or not, I don't know, because people are waking up to all this. I mean, these shots what I've showed of all these migrants, everybody knows about them now. What they probably don't know is that, there's still a lot coming in at night just to, as the woman in sight. And towards the end of it, I actually show again from Adolf Hitler the Great, the great story ever told. Hitler gives his speech in 1942 about this is not a war just for Germany, but for all Europe. And in the long run, it's a war for mankind. And that is exactly what he meant. And I go on then to show Merkel and what's happening in Europe today, where we have white girls now. On the mats praying to Allah. Schoolgirls in the UK were told to recite the prayers in Arabic. You've got Holland school children on the floor, on the mats, bowing, forcing to pray to Allah. And then at the end there, I've got Hitler holding this this German young girl, and it actually says that she has nobody today to protect her from this evil agenda. And then at the end, the final picture shows a young boy again outside praying to Allah with the words, "Now do you understand, Hitler?"
Oh, it's all very true.
That's the point I was trying to make.
Well, it's all very true, Dennis. I mean, a lot of people say, well, you support National Socialism and Hitler. Shouldn't you be supporting Britain? Didn't we fight against Germany? But he was fighting for the whole of Europe
and
for the whole of the white race. And by extension, if you look after the white race, then the other races will be looked after as well. And we are the innovators. We are the creators. 99% of everything's been created by us, and it's not like we keep it all to ourselves. We should have done, I think, that would have solved a lot of problems. But we don't. We share all our technology with these other races. Without us, they wouldn't have all the medicine and the technology and everything else that they make use of in these third world countries. It all comes from us. And he was trying to protect the Germans, protect Europe, protect the white race. And he correctly identified the biggest threat that we have, which is the Jews. I was just thinking about this today. You think, who is it that rules you? Well, who are you not allowed to criticize? You're not allowed to criticize the Jews. And who was it? Who was the first group that made a law that they were not allowed to be criticized? Well, it was the Jews. And then what did they do after that? Well, they wanted to disguise the fact that it was only them that couldn't be criticized. So what they did, they agitated for laws to cover these other groups, to cover it up. So they weren't the only group that weren't allowed to be criticized. So they brought in laws to can't criticize blacks, can't criticize Muslims, can't criticize homosexuals. And all those other laws were only brought in as a cover for the original laws that were brought in against criticizing Jews. That's the only reason for having them.
Yeah. 100% correct. But what it does, this, when you can't actually speak certain words, you know, it's how controlling is that for a nation? I mean, you know, for me not to be allowed to say a word, or, you know, I'll face a fine or even get thrown in prison, you know, is unreal control and power. But they've done it to us, and people are getting sick of it, which is why we had the Brexit. I don't think for any other reason. I don't think people even thought about communism, and why Trump also was elected, because, you know, he doesn't speak like a politician, you know, and he doesn't particularly like political correctness. He certainly doesn't like the global the globalist agenda. Although, you know, I'm still not totally happy with him, as you know, but we'll see. We'll see. He's got time yet to prove me wrong.
Well, I'm very pleased with his first 7 days, but just to say there about the words that they've made actual words of the English language. They've made it illegal for us to say them. It's perfectly fine for these other races to use these words. And when you make words illegal, people tend to stop thinking in that way. That's why they do it, to stop us even thinking these forbidden thoughts about the other races not being equal to our own. If they can ban the words used to think of the other races as different, then it becomes very hard for us to actually think those thoughts in the first place, because we are limited in the way that we think by the language that we use. Africa, the tribes in Africa have very, very limited vocabulary because they never developed writing. So they've only got a few hundred words in the vocabulary, so they can only think in a few hundred ways. Whereas where we have writing in dictionaries, you know, we have hundreds of thousands of words, and each one of those words is for a different thought. Because when we think in our heads, we use our language to think in. So if they can control that and stop us thinking in certain words, their logic is that we will no longer be able to think in these different ways. We will no longer be able to think of the races as being other races as being different to us. You know, that's at the root of it, I think.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, all these. I'm quite stunned, really, at the reaction of people in America when, you know, I saw the rally. This lesbian said, or a feminist, probably both, she said, you know, we'll be watching Trump. What does Trump care about that? You know what I'm trying to say? But I mean, the backlash to Trump being elected is incredible. And that leads me to think that the education system now is in full motion. They get hold of a kid and they're young, they're filling with all this left-wing doctrines and all these, you know, gay, right, all this kind of carry on. And so now you've got masses of people walking around with banners wishing that Hillary Clinton had won the election. And, you know, no doubt we'd have been in World War III as I speak.
Oh, it would be an absolute nightmare if she'd won the election. I think, you know, it'll only take a short time before we start seeing the positive improvement in America from having Donald Trump in power. That's why they're just throwing everything they have at trying to discredit him with all these demonstrations now that are all being funded by corporate capital. They're desperate to try and discredit him now because they won't have a hope in hell in 6 months' time. And the rest of the world is going to be looking and saying, Wow, look at that. Look at that change in America. We need a change like that over here. And these oligarchs and globalists, over here. They're terrified.
I've got over here for the last 30 years is cuts.
Yeah, that's it. You know, but people are sick to death of what's been happening to us with this recession. And when they see America starting to massively improve with a huge patriot like Donald Trump at the helm, they're going to be asking for patriots in France, in Holland, in Britain. I really think we're going to see it. I think this is going to be a really good year for us, Dennis.
Let's hope so. 2017,
indeed. Well, we're pretty much at the end of the podcast, so I'll just remind people to go and check your stuff out, Truth Will Out YouTube channel, and Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, and Communism by the Back Door .tv. So I'll say thank you very much for coming on, Dennis, once again. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening, and we'll be back next Friday.
Hopefully,
hopefully we'll be back next week with Messerschmitt and a new video for you. So look forward to that. Have a great weekend. Ich fahre hoch.
continue.